The following episode of Cave Voice was recorded at midnight, October 20th, 2017. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
Oh, it's good to be back! How's everybody doing today? Are you fired up? You ready to go?
Hello. Thank you for listening to K Voice of Resistance. That's the letter K. Voice of Resistance. I'm your host, Kelly. I want to scream today. There's just so much crap. Our damn government keeps catapulting over my sanity wall. I just need to remember to take a deep breath and remember the words of Mr. Rogers. Look for the helpers. Look for the helpers. There are good people doing good things out there. We just have to look for them.
And so the question now, at a time when our politics just seem so divided and so angry and so nasty, is whether we can recapture that spirit, whether we support and embrace somebody who wants to bring people together. Yes, we can.
If you are a resident of Virginia, the Virginia gubernatorial election of 2017 will take place November 7th, 2017. You have Republican Ed Gillespie, a former Bush administration official and Republican National Committee chairman, versus Democrat Ralph Northam, the Commonwealth's lieutenant governor. And y'all may have heard that our man, President Obama, hit the campaign trail campaigning for Northam, and he had a few things to say.
We need your help. Elections matter. Voting matters. You can't take anything for granted. You can't sit this one out. It's up to you.
It hurts my heart to hear that man talk again. You know, he wasn't a perfect president, and there's plenty that pisses me off about his presidency. But really, that man had class.
Time when all sorts of forces conspire to turn good people off from politics. The way we get our news, the way money floods into our campaigns, the way our political districts are drawn so that candidates are rewarded for pandering to the extremes instead of trying to keep common ground and forging consensus.
Also this week was George W. Bush, no hero, but at least he had a few valuable, surprisingly eloquent things to say.
Bigotry seems emboldened. Our politics seems more vulnerable to conspiracy theories and outright fabrication. There are some signs that the intensity of support for democracy itself has waned, especially among the young. We've seen our discourse degraded by casual cruelty. At times, it can seem like the forces pulling us apart are stronger than the forces binding us together. Argument turns too easily into animosity. Disagreement escalates into dehumanization. Too often, we judge other groups by their worst examples, while judging ourselves by our best intentions. Forgetting the image of God we should see in each other. We've seen nationalism distorted into nativism. We've forgotten the dynamism that immigration has always brought to America. Bigotry or white supremacy in any form is blasphemy against the American creed.
On my Facebook page, K-Voice of Resistance, I've posted an article called Why Rumors of a Gorsuch-Kagan Clash at the Supreme Court Are Such a Bombshell. It's about how Christian warrior, professional mansplainer, and white pride apologist Neil Stolen Seat Gorsuch is turning what is usually a placid Supreme Court into a combative debate hall. Quote, Kagan is cool-headed and pragmatic, but she does not suffer fools gladly. She does enjoy sparring with Justice Samuel Alito, but Alito is a brilliant intellect with a misanthropic wit. Gorsuch, by comparison, is a Fox News anchor's idea of a first-rate justice and an insipid ideologue peddling warmed-over dogmas. Kagan just might find him exasperating enough to merit a rebuttal, drawing her into the ongoing battle. Unquote. I love how that's written. Anyhow, His combativeness is to the point that he's even alienating the justices on his own side, which is fascinating. Maybe, if we're lucky, he'll show the conservatives the absurdity of their own ideas through his idiocy. We can only hope.
Pandering to the extremes instead of trying to keep common ground and forging consensus.
This is your reminder that 81% of Puerto Rico is without power, 31% without running water, and people are drinking at toxic waste sites. This is still a humanitarian crisis. That is 1 million Americans without drinking water, guys. 1 million Americans. It's still going on! Anyhow, these hurricanes have been a mess. And the recovery is clearly a mess. Even the recovery in the well-liked areas by this government, because we know this government likes, you know, Florida and Texas because they vote for them. However, those poor people in Puerto Rico who are, let's say, not so lucky to be Republican voters, things are even more dire. But even in the preferred areas, there are shenanigans going on. So let's talk about disaster capitalism for a little while. Quote, "Capitalism has been described as creative destruction. In the worst case scenario, it is human beings who are destroyed. The market does not care. Profits over people is the true golden rule, and the invisible hand is at work in its most cruel form." Unquote. Chauncey de Vega of Salon. Quote, "No longer able to sustain itself by selling dreams, capitalism now thrives on the management of nightmares. Even the provision of disaster relief is transformed into profit." Unquote. Owen Hatherley, The Guardian. Quote, "A lot of time capitalism simply comes down to assholes willing to dick over people in need." Unquote. Me. So check it out. Investors Business Daily is a site that tracks the financial markets, and as Harvey was bearing down on Texas, it published an unsigned editorial with the headline, "Harvey's Wrath Reveals the Blessing of Liberty." Presumably they got some pushback on that delightful headline, since it was later changed to, "If you're focused on the government's response to Harvey, you're looking in the wrong direction." The site is explicitly pro-business, which would be fine if it didn't also organize itself as propaganda depicting large corporations as kindly souls and public-spirited friends of the people, when by and large, big business is self-serving, given to the seizing of plunder, greed-driven, and as we know, destructive entities. What we do know is that unregulated free markets and unrestrained capitalism largely made the impacts of Harvey worse. The overdeveloped the wetlands, which helped prevent flooding, and the built-up and flood zones regardless of the warnings, and then basic common sense rules and guidelines about designing building codes and infrastructure that could survive severe flooding had been overruled in favor of unregulated growth. And then the unregulated oil and chemical plants left the people of the fourth largest city in America wading through toxic waters and breathing poisonous air. And now, disaster capitalism is working its tentacles into Barbuda.
Dive in and discover Antigua and Barbuda.
We know that most of the island was destroyed. For a long time, understandably, foreigners have wanted to invest in land and property in Barbuda, including Robert De Niro and an Australian billionaire, James Packer, with their desire to revamp a long-shuttered luxury resort, for which has drawn many protests because the terms of the lease are extremely favorable to the investors, according to the Department of State. So Barbuda's really different. Currently, land ownership is prohibited on the island of Barbuda. All lands in Barbuda are vested in the crown on behalf of the people on the sister island. Well, according to the LA Times, the need to rebuild after the hurricane has stirred up decades-old dispute over who, if anyone, owns the land. Basically, the land belongs to the people under a historical tenure system that has allowed anybody of Barbudan descent to use a plot for free. But in the wake of Hurricane Irma, the government has renewed efforts to institute a system of formal individual ownership that says are necessary to get loans for reconstruction. Gaston Browne, the Prime Minister of Antigua and Barbuda, a single nation formed in 1981 from the two Caribbean islands, both former British colonies, has proposed allowing Barbudans to buy plots where they live for $1 each. The deeds they would receive in return could be used as collateral for bank loans to rebuild their homes, most of which were not insured. He calls them a gift. Quote, We're not taking anything from them. We're giving it to them. It is a form of empowerment, unquote. Which sounds great.
But is it really?
The dude described the current arrangement in Barbuda as squatting. This could be the first step in a government land grab. Foreigners have long been able to lease land, and even that has been controversial. A member of the Barbuda Council,
which is the government body whose duties include administering the land,
Kendra Baser, described the government's plan as, quote, an opportunity for disaster capitalism and cultural genocide. If they were to get through with this, then everything that is known to be Barbudan will change automatically. How will we go about applying for a piece of land? How will we go about building our homes? How will we go about starting our businesses? As it stands, a cleaner can apply for a beachfront property and get it. And so can a doctor. So there is no great inequity in Barbuda, unquote. This sounds amazing. Everyone gets a chance. So what happens once they start selling the land? Despite Brown's suspect promise of the $1 sale, the reality will be that the cleaner will not be able to pay the same mortgage that a doctor will for beachfront property. So I guess the story of Barbuda has been a communal system which stems from the widespread and disputed belief that the British colonies ended slavery in 1834. The former slave owners left the land to the slaves and their descendants. Over the years, Barbudans have fought off numerous attempts at what they view as a push to exploit to sell off their land. And in the wake of the hurricane,
not surprisingly,
that is exactly what is and will likely happen.
Enjoy the spectacular landscape as it unfolds before you from high above the warm Caribbean Sea.
So that's one of many examples where disaster capitalism is at play. Another one is FEMA contracts. This year's record hurricane system has led to the biggest spike in government disaster contracts in more than a decade, testing the government's ability to manage the unpredictable and growing cost of climate change. According to Bloomberg Business, since Hurricane Harvey struck Texas, FEMA has awarded $2.2 billion in contracts. That's about twice what the agency typically awards in an entire year. So FEMA, in an effort to speed things up with part of Florida, Texas, and Puerto Rico desperate for help, they're not bothering to deal with the competitive bidding process. FEMA has awarded $178 million in non-compete contracts. Some of this money did go to large public corporations, including Internal Business Machines, Verizon Communications, and Envision Healthcare. However, millions also went to smaller companies with limited records of disaster relief. On September 5th, Gibbco, G-I-B-B-C-O, LLC, got a $74 million award to build mobile homes for Hurricane Harvey victims. Gibbco's only public presence is a GoDaddy website, which lists neither a phone number, an email address, nor information about who runs the company. According to a contract database run by the U.S. Department of Treasury, Gibbco has 5 employees and an annual revenue of $200,000. The address listed as its headquarters belongs to a house in a residential neighborhood in Longboard, Florida. A phone call to the number associated with the company was answered by a man who refused to provide his name or answer questions, saying only, quote, "We don't give information away unless it's approved by the government," unquote. He referred questions to FEMA, which then declined to answer them. During Hurricane Katrina, one of the lasting and enduring images of Katrina was people crying and pleading for water.
"We have no water. You could have dropped it from the sky from them helicopters."
So, according to a federal contractor database, Composite Analysis, Limpsey Mountain Springwater Inc. got $81 million in 2005 for services that included providing bottled water to areas hit by Hurricane Katrina. Lipsy missed at least 9 of 14 deadlines, failed to document its orders properly, submitted improper or inaccurate documentation, and was paid $881,000 in unsupported costs. The U.S. Government of Defense Inspector General later concluded, Composite Analysis didn't respond to a request for comment, and FEMA declined to answer questions about the vetting of the company. Well, here's Rachel Maddow.
But apparently FEMA believes in second chances, because after that experience with that company, just over a decade ago, FEMA has just granted Lipsy, now going by Composite Analysis Group, they've just granted them a new contract for $215 million, this time to deliver bottled water after Hurricane Harvey hit Texas.
And there are more dubious contracts that have been awarded. Bottom line, since Hurricane Harvey hit, FEMA has given out $2.2 billion in contracts, some of which are being awarded to companies with vast violations for similar work. And this breakdown in appropriate delegation of money cannot be blamed on the rush of hurricane season, as federal watchdogs have warned FEMA about situations like this. In 2015, the U.S. Government Accountability Office found the agency still fully hadn't implemented changes to its contracting process that were legislated by Congress after Hurricane Katrina.
There's more FEMA personnel in Texas right now, post-Harvey, than there are in Puerto Rico, even as Puerto Rico goes to a month without drinking water. It's very hard to sort of get your head around. Is there anything from this reporting that tells you, in a holistic sense, whether or not FEMA is well-run right now, whether they're doing a good job?
Look, they are under tremendous pressure. Brock Long, who's the head of FEMA right now, is a seasoned, lifelong emergency management guy. This is what he's done his entire professional career. Does the reporting that we've done indicate that they are aware of any problems in-house about their procurement situation? It does not.
Oh. All right, so let's check in with our government. Yay! Okay, our president on Thursday was busy saying this with the governor of Puerto Rico.
I give ourselves a 10. I think that locally they have, in this gentleman, great leadership. I have to tell you, it's a tough job. But we have provided so much, so fast. We were actually there before the storm hit.
Yeah, totally. You're totally a 10.
Nothing crazy about that assessment at all.
The house is at home, hanging at their own houses. Hanging with the fam, or whatever it is they do.
Hanging with hookers.
And the Senate. Oh, the Senate is in session. Oh, they are so in session, and that is bad news.
A lot of people think that a budget is about numbers. It's not. It's really about values. And the Republican budget tells us a lot about Republican values. The Republican budget will slash taxes for corporations and the super rich, will gut programs for everyone else, and will blow up our national debt.
That was Elizabeth Warren. Senate Republicans on Thursday passed a budget resolution that will unlock the route to a sweeping tax overhaul.
I wanna be a billionaire so fucking bad.
Okay. So Republicans hope to pass their tax reform measure via reconciliation. When it comes to reconciliation bills, debate in both houses, which is limited to 20 hours, and the Senate filibusters aren't allowed. Reconciliation begins with the passage of a budget resolution in both chambers of Congress that includes reconciliation directives. And that's what happened on Thursday. So the 2018 budget resolution, which contains the reconciliation directive, enables Republicans to move tax legislation through the Senate on a simple majority vote, 51, by bypassing any threat of the evil Democrats filibuster. Because we all know that the mean Democrats would vote for the people rather than the billionaires.
Those bleeding heart Dems are assholes.
We have the WikiLeaks on all of them. These people are scum who are intimidated by us because they know we're better than them.
With the GOP controlling the Senate with a slim 52-48 margin, and with Democrats unlikely to support any tax reform bill, reconciliation is the only option to pass Donald's outrageous, rich-filleting, and self-satisfying tax code overhaul. So with the Senate on Thursday voted on amendments to the GOP budget. It was what was called Voterama.
That crazy old Senate and their arcane rules with convoluted procedures.
Voterama is a marathon round of votes on amendments proposed to be attached to a piece of legislation, often budget bills. There have been Voteramas held on farm bills, immigration reform bills, tax bills, and on the recent GOP healthcare bill. Countable explains that the vote process is considered a Voterama if more than 15 amendments are considered back-to-back. The highest number ever voted on was 44, but some Voteramas, over 100 amendments, have been introduced. There have been 57 Voteramas since 1977, and that's the clever folks at Countable pointed out. Fun fact, Star Wars was also released in 1977. What do you want to bet that every Voterama senator and their aides wish they were in a galaxy far, far away from the Senate chambers? Who could blame them? Votaramas go on for up to 12 to 13 hours. No amendment is allowed more than 10 minutes of consideration, with each side only given 30 seconds to present their case before the vote is taken. Aides and staffers are racing to make sure senators even understand what they are voting on before they have to start over with the next one.
What a load of crappy crap crap.
Senators sometimes use the opportunity to offer amendments on controversial issues in order to force colleagues to go on record publicly, which keeps everyone on their toes. According to Politico, Democrats focus their attention on forcing record votes on tax cuts to the wealthy, tax increases to the middle class, and cuts to Medicare and Medicaid in order to pay for the budget increases. As is, the GOP budget resolution for fiscal year 2018. It cuts Medicare and Medicaid by $1 trillion. Cuts medical research and affordable housing education programs by $800 billion. It rains trillions of dollars down on corporations and the super rich, all while ballooning the debt by $1.5 trillion over the next decade.
Bang up job, boys.
And it gets worse. In this whole mess, we have bad news for the environment. And you know, the future of the whole damn planet. The ever-so-clever Republican congressional leaders who passed their filibuster-proof budget included provisions to open up the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, ANWR, to drilling.
And now's when you chant, drill, baby, drill. Yes!
Drilling in the refuge has been a controversial move. Since the presidency of George W. Bush, Republicans have tried multiple times to pass legislation to open up drilling, but have not succeeded. And through the 2018 budget process, they finally did. And here is our reminder that while we are grateful to Lisa Murkowski for her brave and, well,
is brave the term?
Sensible is more like it. Her sensible vote against the Republicans' so-called healthcare law. She is still a Republican. Still an obstructionist, science-denying, Trump-enabling Republican. NBC. Quote, the Senate plan includes a provision asking the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee to find $1 billion in new revenue, which Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski, a Republican who chairs that committee, is expected to do by proposing drilling in ANWR. Unquote. And of course, the repugnant Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, in remarks to the Heritage Foundation last month, commented,
one of my first actions as Secretary of Interior to reverse the ban on coal leasing on our public lands. And we're also making progress in oil and gas. The Trump administration has offered more onshore oil and gas leases in the first 6 months of 2017 than the previous administration did in all of 2016. We've held the first successful sale in the Cook Inlet. And I'm pleased to say in the Gulf of Mexico, we're going to announce our oil and gas leases will be greatly expanded. Under previous administrations, 94% of our offshore was made off limits. And this includes our resources in the great state of Alaska. Under President Trump's leadership, we've initiated a 5-year plan to open up more areas for oil and gas exploration and development. And the road to energy dominance goes through the great state of Alaska.
This is the guy in charge of protecting those lands, damn it!
Now, I have said this before. It is important to keep in mind. And I don't feel it's too tinfoil hat-ish of me to say. But crude oil is selling at $51.29 right now, according to NASDAQ. And that tempting plot of Arctic black gold is 10% of the world's oil reserves, which would cost $150 a barrel to drill, because drilling in the Arctic is really expensive. So drilling in the Arctic is simply not a financially viable option right now. Not that it won't stop them from the environmentally disturbing exploration process, but you see, when George W. Bush was president, gas was selling for $145 a barrel. Why? Because he lied us into a war in an oil-rich country which had nothing to do with 9/11.
What did Iraq have to do with what?
The attack on the World Trade Center.
Nothing!
So what happens after the oil interest find their precious environment-killing oil in this pristine Arctic? How much do you want to bet we find ourselves in a war in one of these oil-producing countries? Make the drilling viable, and the rest, well, past is prologue. also going on in Congress. McCain, along with Senator Amy Klobuchar, Democrat, and Mark Warner, Democrat as well, they're planning to introduce an Honest Ads Act so that paid internet and digital political advertisements are subject to the same regulation as television, radio, cable, and satellite ads. The bill would also require digital platforms to maintain public profile of all political ads it sells beyond certain thresholds. The file would include a digital copy of the ad, a description of the audience it targets, and a number of views it generated, the dates and times of publication, its cost, and the purchaser's contact information. And require online platforms to make reasonable efforts to ensure that foreign individuals and entities aren't buying political ads to influence American voters. The Honest Ads Act will be the first of many proposals on the legislative and regulatory fronts aimed at preventing online platforms like Facebook from being used by foreign actors. To influence a U.S. election. Which is great! A bipartisan effort to at least do something in the face of Russian shenanigans. All right, we have a call to action.
Call to action.
Oppose anti-voting rights, Thomas Farr for federal judgeship. That is T-H-O-M-A-S-F-A-R-R. Attorney Thomas Farr has a long history of defending policies deliberately designed to disenfranchise black voters.
He defended a voter ID law in North Carolina that prevented an estimated 30,000 voters from participating in the 2014 election. A federal court ultimately ruled that the law was unconstitutional because it was designed, quote, with almost surgical precision, unquote, to discourage black voters from voting. Farr also defended North Carolina's gerrymandering public districts, districts which the Supreme Court concluded were drawn to dilute the impact of black voters. Now, Donald has nominated Farr for a lifetime appointment as federal judge. To add insult to injury, Farr would fill the longest-running vacancy in federal court system. This seat has remained open because Senator Richard Burr, Republican of North Carolina, refused to approve President Barack Obama's nominees for his position, despite Burr having recommended one of the nominees to Obama himself. Once again, Republicans plan to fill a judgeship stolen from the Obama administration with an anti-civil rights and anti-voting rights attorney who will actively work to suppress black voters. The courts provide one of the few remaining checks on the Trump administration's crusade against progressive policies and electoral fairness. The court rulings against the discriminatory policies of Farr himself defended demonstrate the need for federal judges who are committed to protecting voting rights. Urge your senators to reject Farr's appointment to a lifetime federal judgeship. Call the switchboard. Let your feelings known. Number is, as always, 202-225-3121. Say it with me now.
202-225-3121.
One more time. That's 202-225-3121. Good job. Okay, I'm gonna go. Thank you so much for listening. You can find my show on crabdiving.com. That's one word, crabdiving.com, under the KYS tab. Or download my show as a podcast, wherever it is you get your podcast. Catch Ryan Pfeiffer and Patrick Beil, all your progressive news, 5 days a week on the Crab Diving Podcast. Follow me on Twitter at KellyTheVoice. And of course on Facebook at KVoice of Resistance. Okay, take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.
Goodness of America. Goodness and decency and hard work and responsibility and sacrifice that's on display by the American people every single day in their communities all across this great country, all across this great state. People of every walk of life, it doesn't matter whether they're white or black or Hispanic or Asian or Native American, whether they're disabled, whether they are gay or straight, there are people all across this country that want to do things better, that want to work together. And I've seen the possibilities of our democracy.